Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello, welcome to the reaction show. Of course, a big day of news, I'd say, in the Norwich City space. We've both been down at Colney this morning for a round of interviews with Ben Napper, the sporting director. Some interesting topical points coming out of that, which I'm sure anybody who's consumed that piece of content will have opinions on. So, of course, let us know down in the comments section your opinions on that. Connor, clearly there's only one sort of place to start, and that probably is the head coach search. But confirmation that it will not be Jack Wilshere, I suppose your reaction to that piece of news?
Yeah, really interesting. I think much is topical at the moment. You were looking at the chimney kind of maybe expecting some white smoke, and instead it's the black smoke that has appeared. Yeah, that was the eyebrow-raising moment, wasn't it, in that interview this morning where Ben Napper revealed Jack Wilshere would not be under consideration for the permanent Norwich City head coach role, which, given the way that he's performed in the last 2 weeks, certainly the player reaction to him, I've spoken to at least 4, I think, off the top of my head, and all of them wanted Jack to be the head coach. Such was the impact that he'd made and the relationship that he'd had with those players. And I think as well, it was kind of assumed because of, obviously, Johannes Hoftorup's media in Denmark post his sacking that spoke about that pathway that brought Jack Wilshere to the club initially as a first team coach to eventually then step up, but also Ben Napper's prior relationship to him. He was so pivotal in making sure that Jack Wilshere, and obviously we broke the story at the time, it was really key that Ben Napper's relationship to bring him here. It was a difficult step for him to leave Arsenal to move into senior coaching, and that clearly was with a view to one day becoming the head coach of Norwich City. And the fact that hasn't happened is really interesting. That being said, I did think one of the things that stacked against Jack Wilshere was that inexperience, not just in management, clearly, which he didn't have any of prior to the last 2 games, but also senior coaching more generally. It's only since October that he's coached senior players, and that is quite a big step up. So I think probably the risk was too great at this stage. And I think that feels probably like the right decision. And it was certainly, I know, a prerequisite of their search last summer, and was why names like Carlos Cuesta, who was in the frame last summer, if you remember, Jack Wilshere, maybe even himself, weren't considered because of that lack of managerial senior level experience, which Johannes Hoftorup obviously did have. Will Still and Pascal Janssen, who were both on that shortlist, they both had it as well. It's something that Jack Wilshere at the moment doesn't have, and I think ultimately that probably is what has gone against him. But I mean, we both dealt with him publicly. Lovely guy, really lovely guy. I think you're always a bit wary of how these big names in football are going to walk into a room, and are they going to have an ego or an edge to them? And he didn't. He was humble. He was kind. I thought he was really good and insightful with his answers. But no doubt he will be a good head coach at this stage. But I think for where Norwich City are right now, for what they want to achieve, to put all of your eggs in the Jack Wilshere basket, I think would be a massive gamble, Adam.
Indeed. Yeah. I was going to quickly play the clip about Ben Napper speaking, maybe why it won't be Jack Wilshere, and then we'll talk a little bit about maybe where his future lies.
Ben, can I just loop you back around, if I can, back to the Jack Wilshere decision? Is it safe to say you'll have had your criteria? Probably at this stage, is the maybe lack of senior coaching experience come into play?
Yes. There's no getting away from that, Paddy. Like I said, Jack is incredibly talented. There's no doubt for me that he will be a top head coach. He's hungry, he's ambitious. Everything that we've seen from him since we've been here would suggest that he will get to that place. But yeah, just for our context and where we're at and where he's at in his journey, yeah, I just didn't feel that this was that particular moment in time.
Yeah, Kobe saying, does that mean Jack Wilshere will leave? I mean, subsequently, there's been reports from various sources that maybe Jack Wilshere is considering departing Norwich City or already has departed Norwich City from certain reports you read. In terms of that situation, and maybe have Ben Knappen mapped it out, Connor, do you get the impression that Jack Wilshere will look to leave Carrow Road this summer with kind of maybe a view of trying to progress his career somewhere else as a head coach?
Yeah, I think so. And look, he was very clear, very open. He wants to be a head coach. He feels he's ready to impact things at a championship level and be a head coach. And so to say that stuff publicly and then to go back into a first team coaching role, I think would be difficult for him. And not just for him, I think the optics for whoever Norwich City would bring in would be quite difficult, because constantly in the background you have a guy there who people have seen in that role and perform that role over two games. And you know, let's not forget Carrow Road was singing his name after the game on Saturday. So in some cases there were people there who liked what they saw in Jack Wilshere, even as a very young person and a very young coach. And I'm with Ben Knapper. I've no doubt that Jack Wilshere will go on to be a head coach and probably a very talented one. But for this moment right now, it probably did feel like it was too much of a risk, too much of a gamble for Norwich City. And particularly after the route they went down with Johannes Hoftorp last season, it feels next season, Ben Knapper laid it out, they want to be in the top six. They want to be closer to that top six and trying to get promotion. To put all of your weight then behind somebody who's never even done the job before would be a massive call for anybody. And actually, you know, I think fair play to Ben Knapper, because in many ways it would have been easier for him to hand Jack Wilshere the job off the back of the two games and to say to people, look, well, there you go. You've seen what he can do. He's got a response out of players over two games. Over two games it's not a sample size that you can judge anything from, really. It's about whether Jack Wilshere over 15, 20, 30, 46 games in the championship campaign, if he could engineer that level of response. And ultimately, I think it was probably just too much of a risk, too much of a gamble, too many unknowns at this stage to say with any real clarity or definitiveness that he absolutely could, let alone, you know, even at kind of youth football, it wasn't that sort of senior level experience. And yeah, for him now, it's probably about going out and trying to find a job as a number one. And what this opportunity will have done for him as well is put him in the shop window and given him other clubs a really good look at him for what he could be as a head coach. And I think on the whole, he was an absolute credit to the way he handled himself. And you know, he looked like a manager. He spoke like a manager. He behaved like a manager. And I'm sure that he will, in the not-so-distant future, become a manager, obviously not at Norwich City, but elsewhere. And I'm sure everyone will follow his career with interest. And it's been, it's been a fascinating few weeks with him at the helm, for sure.
Yeah, indeed. Alex asking the question, just to be clear, was the decision to not go with Wilshere 100% Ben Knapper's decision?
Yep, 100%, yep.
There we go. I suppose in terms of maybe the picture from here on now, Connor, clearly there's not that many names in the frame. You know, you kind of take the betting odds, but, you know, there's not actual firm reports. Obviously, there was the Tom Cleverley stuff that, you know, subsequently been sacked from Watford, and there's not masses. I suppose, do you expect that those noises to grow now, you know, moving into these next couple of weeks? Because Ben Knapper pretty clear that he wants this done, you know, in not really, really quick, you know, fashion, but, you know, certainly by the time we kind of get back to the players being in the building and sort of maybe by the end of May, it feels like that's maybe a roadmap.
Yeah, exactly that. And I think twofold, really. It's that opportunity that in the summer, and this I'm sure, well, we know was why was a factor in the Torup decision, is that in the summer you have naturally more candidates, and that's in and out of work. You have more coaches that are probably willing to listen to you in the summer, and you have more people considering their options. And that makes this a better window to be looking for a head coach than at any stage during a season where you're probably limited and there's a more limited pool. And equally, I think the timing is interesting. That for me, and I'm only saying this on an opinion rather than anything I know at the moment, I've got to be honest, the sort of noises out of this search has been very, very minimal. We've heard very little throughout at any stage, which is probably a credit to maybe the process that Norwich are running. I also think there's probably been some respect shown to Jack Wilshere as well, because he was only communicated that decision yesterday. So clearly to then go in the background and be running a really advanced process over his head wouldn't be the best thing ethically to do. So maybe now it steps up, we'll hear some of those noises. But to me, it feels like if you were going to go down the route of somebody who was available already and is available at this moment in time, could end up being wrong in this. And as I say, this is not said from a place of knowledge. then it feels to me like that would probably move a little bit quicker than the pace that Norwich City are moving at the moment. From my experience, you look at, for example, the David Wagner search that took them 10 days from Smith being sacked to Wagner being unveiled. Whereas last summer, clearly it took a little bit longer because they were after someone who was already in a job. Now they will have a range of candidates, I'm sure, and they won't be discounting anybody who's out of work. But the fact, the timeline that has been given, you tend to think that probably means that we're going to be speaking about someone maybe who's employed elsewhere, be that domestically or otherwise. But I think it would be remiss of them at the moment to completely discount anyone who's out of work. There's some very, very good candidates. I've already seen certain candidates' name already in the comments appear on a few occasions. So I'm sure they won't limit themselves, but that my gut instinct is that we're looking at somebody who is in a job at the moment. But again, I say that from a place of opinion, not from a place of knowledge. I mean, I don't know what you think of the timing, but and this was the point for me, really. Every day that we went past Cardiff last weekend, it felt less likely to be Jack Wilshere, because that's something they could have done very quickly. So yeah, what do you make of the timeline, Adam? Do you agree, disagree with my kind of theory at the moment?
No, I'm fully on board with you, I think, on that situation. Yeah, it's pretty clear to me, you know, that when they decided to pivot away from Torup, they probably began that search and that kind of, yeah, sort of process of trying to, you know, factor in who's going to be the man moving forwards. It just gives them that little bit more leeway. And clearly, you know, there was going to be no damage done by, you know, allowing Jack Wilshere a couple of games. He probably has benefited from that now moving into kind of his future career, because clearly he's now managed a couple of games at a senior level and, you know, probably would have had interest at some point down the line for a head coach gig. So clearly, you know, that's done him no damage. So I think altogether, I just don't think Napa could have took that risk of going with Wilshere just due to that lack of kind of senior, you know, coaching experience, even at Norwich, only been in the building for what, 9-10 months. So I just think it was probably a risk that he probably couldn't really afford to take. And that lends itself a little bit onto the Torup stuff, Connor. I mean, what did you make of kind of his explanation for the decision to part ways with Johannes, clearly only 10 months into a project that, you know, after months of scouting him and sort of doing all the sort of work behind the scenes to pull the plug on it, you know, clearly would be, you know, disappointing, but also maybe understandable from the reasons he gave.
Yeah, and you know, I wrote about this at the time. I think two things can be true at once. I think it's true that, you know, Johannes could have felt that maybe the top six was an ambition, maybe rather than a target. That can be true. And I do think generally Norwich's communication of their targets this year has been a little bit muddled. And, you know, I think Ben Napper in a roundabout way kind of maybe accepted that, although internally he said that there was no ambiguity and everyone was on the same page. And I think what he says is right. There's clearly two people there who have lost their jobs and that hurts. And as well, you know, within that, Johannes has got a pitch to try and get other jobs, right? So it makes sense to try and create a narrative that is useful for you, I would suggest. That being said, that can all be true, but equally on the same side of it, what he said about the trends, the performances, the results, the metrics, the player development, individual and the team performance as a collective was all deteriorating, and not just deteriorating, it was imploding really from what we saw at Portsmouth and Millwall. And it's very difficult in any context, in any long, short, mid-term situation for a coach to lose 6 in 10 and to expect to still be in post. It just, barring maybe David Wagner in the autumn of last season, where he was aided a little bit by the sporting director switch, and I think had it not been for a few results, probably would have been gone a lot earlier than he was. You know, that you just don't survive those at any club at any level, I think, now. And maybe that's a sad reality, but it's also a reality of where we are. You just cannot expect to perform and to have a team performing as badly as Norwich were and expect to stay in post over, you know, what was a significant chunk. It was an 18 game block, really, that Norwich City's performances really deteriorated. They were bottom of the form table. So, yeah, you can't negate those facts by just talking about how everything's going to be great in the future. Actually, if the points don't suggest that, if the performance meters aren't showing that, then you have to be reactive. And I think maybe it's a nice sign. I don't know. Quite often we sort of think about Norwich and head coaches, and you think about them keeping them for too long. This was decisive. It was ruthless, and clearly it was evidence based as well from what Ben Napper said today. So, yeah, I think you could make an argument for keeping Johannes, and who knows, in a different parallel universe, maybe he gets the summer, maybe he gets next season, it looks a lot better. But I think there was a lot of red flags around the defensive performance, the out of possession stuff and whatnot. And I think ultimately that probably is alongside probably the individual development, what's got him, rather than this maybe arbitrary sense that they had to get in the top six. As Ben Napper explained today, I think if they'd have finished eighth or ninth and actually the performances were improving and the players were improving and there was real optimism behind what they were building, we'd still be talking about Johannes Hovtorup as Norwich City's head coach. The reality is they finished closer to the relegation zone. They finished in the bottom half. That's not what the aim or the ambition was this season. And yeah, that's ultimately, I think, probably fair enough. It's difficult to argue, I think, against any of those points.
Indeed, yeah. I think it's probably fair to say there was a perception maybe growing from within the fan base that communication was maybe a concern. You kind of take Johannes Hovtorup's comments in the Danish media around, you know, maybe the change in the goalposts, and he felt that top six as a target wasn't communicated to him personally. You then get the Angus Gunn interview post Cardiff, where he maybe spoke around, you know, Ben Napper only communicating his exit from the football club, you know, for the 2-minute conversation, you know, a few days before that. That Carrow Road game. So clearly that, you know, this was only that kind of one side of the story was out there. Ben Knapp had his opportunity to sort of back, I suppose, on those comments. A couple of people asking comments around that. What did you guys make of the response to Paddy's excellent question and communication issues in view of JHT and Angus's comments? Ben as well on YouTube saying, I'm puzzled that it seems to have been communicated to Jack Wilshere that he wasn't a candidate by until this late stage. Torup Gunn Wilshere, is this a troubling pattern of poor communication? So I suppose on communication, Connor, what did you take from his comments on that situation? And I suppose maybe, you know, counteract that with some of the other comments out there from the other characters that are sort of involved in this scenario.
Yeah, before we get there, I think it is worth, you won't like it, but it is worth shouting out Paddy, because I thought we asked some excellent questions, some really pressing questions. And you know, I know that some people in some quarters maybe like to give a stick around some of the questions that are asked, but I thought Paddy's were excellent today. So yeah, I'll give him a shout out for that, because he won't give that to himself. And I thought, yeah, it was lots of interesting answers in there. Yeah, in terms of communication more generally, like I still feel, irrespective of the way Napper laid it out today on Gunn specifically, where, you know, clearly there was conversations with his agent, that was always going to be the case. And, you know, I just wonder if that situation could have been handled in a way that wasn't the way it ended. And you know, Angus shouldn't be leaving Norwich with those feelings, irrespective maybe of the view you have on him as a footballer. Clearly what that family name means to Norwich and what they've contributed over a long period of time. As we said in the last pod, there's been a Gun in the hot seat or as a player in every decade since the 1980s. It's an incredible stat, and it's been a name synonymous really with the football club. It's a shame that it ends with maybe Angus taking some kind of, trying to punch upwards a little bit, I guess. And you know, I thought Napper handled that well. That being said, is it something that could have been managed a lot better? Probably. Yeah, and as for the communication point more generally, I think there had, you know, if I was a fan, I'd probably feel like there'd been a little bit of mixed messaging, because, you know, it felt like for so much of the campaign, it was about transition and projects and all of those type of words were being used. And then suddenly it became about top six. That being said, we were in the room where Johannes Hovtorup on a few occasions spoke about top six. So I think maybe this notion, this idea that it was never mentioned and it was this huge shock is maybe for the birds a little bit, and is maybe slightly revisionism. But yeah, again, I think that there's maybe a little bit of confusion about what was an ambition and what was a target, because it didn't ever really feel like top six was a target. It felt more like something, particularly after the free injury kind of crises they had. It was one that, if all the stars aligned and the world come together, that maybe they could have got in there. But again, that can all be true, and you can build for the long term. But ultimately, if your performances are as bad as they were and your results are as bad as they were, you're going to be in trouble. And that's what football is, I'm afraid, in this day and age. And as a coach, you can't expect to be given time unless you show evidence that there is reason for that. And you think back to Norwich's best performances. They were in September, in October, in November, in December. Weren't really too many in 2025 to hold on to. So yeah, look, I think clearly today gave him the opportunity to reset a lot of those, and I felt he did that. I felt it was as pointed, as direct, as open as we'd maybe seen him. I'm writing a piece on it at the moment, and I've kind of compared him to the cricket reference, but a bit like a test match opener at times in the three touch points we've had with him, where he's been a little bit safe, he's been quite composed and cool, and he's, you know, notched up runs, and hasn't ever really looked like he's broken sweat, but he's been quite conservative, quite unadventurous. There's been a lot of sort of defensive shots. You came away from from the conversations, not really feeling like there was anything too eyebrow raising in particular. And I didn't really feel that going into today that we could afford to have another performance like that, really, because I think clearly the events that have happened, the things that have been leveled against them, required a bit more front footedness, a bit more aggression, not in the sense of I want to fight, but in terms of actually proactiveness in coming out and trying to set a few things straight. And I thought he did that. Now, you know, the good folks who are watching this, the 1300 or so at the moment, can comment. They can tell us if they liked the answers, if they thought the answers were adequate. Ultimately, it's going to be actions. And he has, since he's walked in the door, tried to pride himself on actions rather than words. And it felt like at the moment, certainly leading into this, he probably needed both. And ultimately, the words can be as good as the words are. If you don't get the actions right, then people are going to give you very little forgiveness. And I think he admitted it himself. This feels like a big hire for him in terms of that head coach role.
Yeah, clearly the summer transfer window is a key topical point, which we'll come to in just a moment. But in terms of maybe the medical department and the injury situation this season, clearly being a detrimental factor in Norwich's form at different point, you know, losing key players on regular occurrences. And, you know, it just kind of feels like it's been a theme of press conferences where you're kind of going in thinking, okay, who's going to be injured this week? And, you know, there's maybe been times where players have been thrusted back in too quickly. Maybe there's perceptions been sometimes players have, maybe fans have been begging for Sargent to come back in quicker and, he's maybe been bedded in slowly. So it was a topic he was asked about. I know he was asked around this in the February round of interviews as well, but it was a slight maybe change in his tone today. So what did you make of kind of his view on the medical department and that sort of sports science and sort of maybe trying to get players in a situation where they're not picking up injuries quite so frequently?
Yeah, I thought he struck the right balance, because I think, and he's right, this issue can become quite binary at points, it feels like, in terms of people say Norwich get a lot of injuries, that must mean their medical department is bad. And you can have kind of processes that are really good. And I spoke to someone a while back who is very experienced in this field, who's worked in football for a long time. And they told me, actually, the bit you don't see is how many injuries are prevented. That's the bit that's not calculated. And it's such a multifaceted debate because so much goes into it. And I felt there was some good reflective points in terms of maybe them being perhaps a little bit too aggressive in trying to get players back and trying to speed up their recovery process and paying the price for that. And maybe that element of knowing when to risk, knowing when to push has to change. And clearly, I think on the back of what you said, an audit's been done, they're going to try and change some of their processes. And that's not to say definitively that they found anything necessarily was wrong, but clearly the sheer amount of injuries that they had this season, I think you've got to try and do something a little bit different and to try and change it up, because whatever they were doing this year, it didn't work. They did have too many injuries, and too many injuries that probably you looked at and felt, you know, how many of them were down to luck, were down to contact, there was a fair few of them. There was probably too many in the other side in terms of felt like they were preventable, felt they were load issues, felt like they were management issues. And look, sometimes that can be to do with coaches and their training periodization and their schedule and their structure and how intense they are on the training pitch. And sometimes that doesn't help matters. So it can be as a result of multiple things. Sometimes not all of that is to do with the guys that are actually employed in medical roles. And sometimes that's too easy to throw out there to say that those guys are in that department, therefore it is that their fault. It's like, you know, we'd have a similar conversation, I guess, around Norwich City's defence. It wasn't just Norwich City's defenders that were culpable for that. It was actually the goalkeepers and the midfield and the collective structure of it. There's so much that goes into these factors that make it multifaceted, and that's the case here. But clearly, I think the fact that they've had a review, the fact that they're going into next season with some new processes, having tried to change a little bit of the practices and the approach that they take to it, I think that's got to be a positive. And hopefully, and we all cross our fingers, maybe not, and you know, we don't want to end up with anything broken and whatnot in the spirit of the way this season has been, but we all cross our fingers that it gives them a better chance of keeping players fit, because clearly that's been a massive, massive issue this season.
Yeah, he was also asked around Matai Jurasek, which has, you know, clearly been an ongoing saga, and we've had various conversations on different platforms across our channels around him, and maybe him trying to get back involved, and is it an injury thing, and what, you know, where's kind of him in moving into the new season. So it was a question posed by Donny, our colleague at ITV, around maybe him and will he be ready for the summer. What did you make of kind of his response to that? Because clearly they outlaid a big, you know, amount of money in in that January window for him. But he's a lad who's been dropped into, you know, into England for the first time, clearly adapting, you know, off the life, off, you know, pitch off, life off the pitch, sorry. You know, Ono and Anders spoke around that in the podcast, the Line in Castle last week. And, you know, evidently, you know, it's a player they brought in on a 5.5-year deal. You know, they're probably going to be judging him over a longer period of time. And you know, I think Napa probably feels himself that January is a tough window to be able to bring someone in from overseas and expect an instant impact.
Yeah, which isn't why they signed him. They didn't sign him to come in January and give them an instant impact. He was signed because they felt if they'd left it until this window, they wouldn't have been able to sign him. Such was the level of club that was in for him. And again, I think there is a little bit of a perfect storm maybe that weathered here. It was clearly that expectation that he came into because of the price tag, because of Norwich needing a right winger. I don't think that's probably exasperated the issue. But again, it's a few, much like a previous debate, there's so much that goes into this. It is the fact he's come from a place where he wasn't playing. There was a winter break, so he wasn't training. He was essentially in pre-season. Then that got delayed because of the Brexit regulations and he had to then join up later. And then he was thrust into a full-on championship mid-season training schedule, matches. It is difficult to get back up to that intensity. It is, of course. And, you know, you're bang on about what you said in terms of the Onel reference. And I'd encourage anyone that's now up on our sites if you want to read it and, you know, don't fancy skimming through an hour of us clowns speaking more nonsense. But there is some good stuff in there from Onel Hernandez where he speaks about, you know, because he knows a lot more than me and you, right? He's lived that experience and now I'm 25. The idea even now of me being kind of put into a different country, I think I'd struggle. So, you know, he's younger than both of us and probably a lot of people watching this. And, you know, it can be difficult when you don't speak the language or you're not confident, and even small things like, you know, you drive on a different side, the money's different. All of these things can be unsettling. They can take time to get your head around. And actually, after Onel made those comments, I went to have a look at the impact that he made in that 17-18 campaign. And I think he played 12 games, made 5 starts, had injury issues. So, yeah, played more than the Mate Jurasek has since he joined the club, but didn't play a lot. And actually, it was the following season, that 18-19 campaign, where he really exploded. And I think it was clear when, you know, you speak to, and Onel said this, and it was unprompted. We didn't ask him about it, but he offered it up. And, you know, certainly when you spoke to Johannes and you speak to a few other people, they're really excited by this kid. And they think that if they get him up to full speed, which now is the aim over the summer, he's not going to play international football. He's going to be in the building all summer working up his fitness, that actually he can come in next season and hit the ground running, but also become a really key player for Norwich City. And that's what we all want, because I think on the very, very, very small sample, 80 minutes or so that we saw him over the 2 games, there was a lot to like. He was pacey. He was kind of a threat on the outside. He did give Norwich a slightly different dimension. And if you can get a tune out of that and obviously some availability out of that, then, hey, that's going to be a major weapon for a new head coach coming in, because that is going to, it's the old cliche that it is going to feel like a new signing, isn't it? And yeah, you just hope that excitement that people feel and have seen on the training pitches at Colney, because they have, hopefully translates into a championship season where he's fit and available and in a better place. And certainly from the people you speak to at the moment, it sounds like he's maybe in the best place he's been since he's joined. So yeah, it feels like the noises around him are considerably more positive heading into June and at the start of pre-season. That's going to be massive as well, getting a full pre-season for him. And yeah, hopefully it works out for him, because it would be a real shame if he didn't. And you know, that didn't work out, but seems to be, there's no panic, I guess, is probably the feeling from inside that camp. And I think Ben Napa probably conveyed that quite well today.
I think it's fair to say that it's a big summer transfer window, you know, on the horizon for Norwich. Clearly a lot of work to be done, you know, to try and remould and reshape this squad, which will be under a new head coach. And clearly that will bring, you know, a different dynamic maybe to how Norwich do their dealings. Let's talk about maybe potential outgoings and how Napa spoke around them first. Clearly there's a trio that I think most fans probably look at and fear might potentially be departing the football club. Borja Sainz, you know, second top goal scorer, I think it was in the championship. Josh Sargent, you know, you sort of take away his injuries this season and just how good he's been. Norwich's player of the season, you know, in the championship, player of the season, you know, running and obviously got in that team of the year. So Nunez as well, you know, I know his form's maybe dipped a little bit over recent weeks, but I thought maybe slightly back to his best in that Cardiff game, albeit a bit of a dead rubber. So what did you make of his comments around that trio? Because evidently there's going to be interest in all three, maybe different amounts of interest. You know, clearly, I think Sainz and Sargent maybe slightly more so than Nunez. But is there an expectation that any of those three, I suppose, will be here moving into the summer based on what Bednarek had to say?
Well, I thought he was strongest on Nunez in terms of we want him to stay. We like him as a player. And I think with him, you have to... He's in a bit of a different realm, I think, to Science and Sargent, because I'm looking at it and I'm sort of wondering who comes in for him, what level of interest he attracts. And that could be majorly wrong, but it doesn't feel like to me that the numbers involved in that, or maybe even the caliber of club that come into him. And look, he had Trabzonspor last summer, so it's possible you get that sort of level of interest come in and whatnot. But Norwich, he's got 12 months left on his contract. Is it worth taking 3-4 in order to get him out the door? I'm not sure it is. I think you need a decent sum of money to justify that. If not, you might as well keep him around the place for what he can offer you and what he brings to the group. I think there is, and we've seen it on his day. I think there is that inconsistency to him. And back end of the season, I didn't think any of the performances, really barring the last day, were good enough to be completely honest. And, you know, we could maybe layer different debates into that. But I feel on the final day, he showed what he's about. He's got a good range of passing. He's a very energetic footballer. He's very likeable when he plays and when he doesn't play. And, you know, you have to weigh up, I guess, is it worth keeping him for a year and letting his contract run down? Or is it worth taking 3-4 million quid for him? And actually, maybe if you get money for Science, get money for Sargent, then maybe that enables you to keep Nunez in the building. And of course, what feeds into that is a new head coach's view as well. They might come in and they might say, look, I don't want this lad, in which case it makes the debate easier. But yeah, he feels the likeliest of the three to me to stay around. But it wouldn't shock me if none of them are around, to be honest, come the end of that transfer window. I think Science, Ben said it this morning, I think there's going to be enough interest in him for that to happen. Clearly, his contractual status as well, the sort of level and the fee is going to be interesting. I think if Norwich got a fee in around those Villarreal reports, I think they've done very well, to be completely honest. And that would be good. I think we can compare it to the John Rowe money last summer. That was very, very good money that they got for Jonathan Rowe. What was it, 14 million quid for a player who had 12 months left on his deal, or in a similar place with Borja Sainz. Sainz is what, slightly older. Yeah, I think they'll do well to kind of get anywhere near what they got for Rowe, probably. But if they could get double figures, that would be brilliant. And then Sargent's a really interesting one. Clearly, Norwich have a lot more strength and a lot more power in position on this. He's going to have options. He's going to have interest. It's the type of one that you could see rumbling on all summer long, isn't it, Josh Sargent, and getting to a level where that fee is paid. Clearly, I think there'd be interest from the MLS, from Premier League. I could see Bundesliga as well. And I think he could play in any of those leagues pretty comfortably, if I'm honest. So, those are the two that I look at. And I'd be very, very shocked if they were Norwich City players come the closure of the transfer window. I think Nunez is probably the one we look at with maybe a little bit of, there's a possibility that he sticks around. And that would be pretty good, I think, if they could get that done. And then, of course, if you get beyond the transfer window, there is a world where maybe there's not been that much interest and he's a little bit more amenable to potentially talking about a new contract. So, I think the Nunez one feels the most fluid at this moment in time. But equally, would it surprise me if it went the other way and someone came in for him at the right amount, with the right opportunity? No, it wouldn't, to be honest.
No, I'd agree with everything you just said. Just to answer Tim's question, it's pretty clear. I think the Rowe deal's all done and dusted, in it, Connor.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I found this a little bit odd because it was an obligation. So unless Marseille went down, it goes through, and that's the way they work. So there was never any likelihood. Why would Norwich take 5 million quid when they could get 14 for a player that didn't want to be here last summer, that didn't handle his departure in the best way, and also is out of contract as well? So for him to come back here, he'd have to agree a new contract with Norwich. There's too much in there to ever make that a reality. So yeah, that is definitely not happening. He's definitely not returning. He'll be a Marseille player. What happens after that is up to Marseille, but he'll be a Marseille player in the summer permanently.
I also think this Sinat situation is being slightly over-egged. Clearly, the report, I think, was more around maybe him being one for last summer, a sort of a number two for Guirassy, rather than someone that's going to be, leaving Norwich again this summer.
Yes, bang on. I've got nothing to add there to what you said. You're bang on. It's always interesting how these reports kind of go in circles. But that was definitely my reading of the initial report, which I think was put out as a little bit of a filler in an international break. So yeah, that for me is pretty obvious. And we'll obviously, if there's anything that does pop up, we'll bring that to you. But it doesn't sound like that's going to be the case at this stage.
Indeed, yeah. Let's talk a little bit maybe around incomings. Clearly, two of them he was slightly more clear on, I'd say, than maybe Callum Doyle. Let's start there, because I mean, Hannes spoke around this situation and maybe, you know, they'd like to maybe try and bring Doyle back. Realistically, the fee that would be commanded for him, and you know, you spoke to him post Cardiff. He made it pretty clear that he now wants to be moving out of Man City, only somewhere where he's going to be permanent, rather than, you know, another year of a loan move where there's, you know, upheaval and, you know, trying to get him sort of embedded into an environment, into a club, and learn a playing style and whatever. And it's, you know, clearly it's disruptive for a young player. So what did you make of Ben Napper's comments around him? It feels unlikely he'll be a Norwich player next season.
Yeah, felt pretty open and closed, didn't it, in terms of he clearly doesn't expect Callum Doyle to become a Norwich City player. I think, you know, Johannes spoke about this before he left. The fee involved is too big. From what I've sort of gathered and heard, it feels like I think he's going to have options abroad and at home this summer. Going to be interesting to see where that ends up. And I think there'll be top level championship clubs looking at him. I think, I think there'll be options abroad for him, and it's all about where he wants to take his career. But clearly, I think after, 4 years on loan, he now needs a place to call home where he can really settle down, develop, put his energy into and trying to get some consistency into his life, probably more than anything else. He's been all over the place. So, look, really talented footballer. I think if there was a world where Norwich City could do that deal, it would be brilliant. And I'm sure they would, because he's been very popular inside the dressing room, but also popular in terms of his footballing ability and what he offered them from a left-sided perspective. They've got Jose Cordoba in the building as well. I think that's probably another facet who's a similar age and got a year of English football under his belt. You'd hope under a new coach we see some real development and strides taken for him, which we did see at some points last season. It maybe didn't end as well as it started for him, but there's definitely a player in there. So yeah, all things considered, I think at this stage it feels unlikely. Whether that's again something that is fluid and moves throughout the summer, we'll see. But at the moment, certainly all the noises you hear, and Ben Napper reiterated that today, made it seem like it was very unlikely.
Yeah, Jeffman saying, like what I heard around Wright and Dobbin, would we be able to confirm Wright before the transfer window opens? Sounded like it might be soon. He's pretty definitive that, you know, Jacob Wright's one that they want to get in the building on a permanent deal. Obviously, have the option there to do that. In terms of Lewis Dobbin, wasn't quite so, I suppose down the middle and straight with it. But clearly a player that I think if planets could align, they would try and bring back.
Yeah, I mean, on Jacob Wright, bang on. I think that will happen, is my feeling. I think it's just about now. There's some very technical stuff in the contract that things have to be activated by a certain point, and it's then whether they can bring forward sort of official announcements prior to doing that and all of that kind of stuff that needs to be sorted out. But, you know, the player wants it. The clubs are happy. Clearly, as you said, there's an option there to do it. He negotiated terms when he joined initially in January, so none of that is a problem. So yeah, I would expect him to become a Norwich City player. It's just about when rather than if. Clearly these things are never done until he's stood with a scarf above his head and has signed that contract officially. But that's certainly the noises, and you know, Ben Napper said as much today, feeling very confident on that one. Yeah, Dobbin's a really interesting one. They're in a position where they've got a first refusal on him in terms of a season-long loan. That feels to me less likely at the moment than it did. I think clearly he had a very close relationship with Johannes Oftorup. I think that was clear. But I thought he made a really good impact when he came in. The one thing I personally have concerns about is that injury record. That calf injury is something that he's encountered, not calves, but he's struggled a bit with Achilles and whatnot, and injuries more generally. So I think you've got to weigh up. We've just done a whole section on speaking about injuries to then go and buy someone with that, or loan someone, sorry, as it would be a season-long loan with that sort of context, I think maybe isn't the best thing you can do in the world. So yeah, we'll see. I think if it's not Lewis Dobbin, I could probably see another domestic winger on loan somewhere. So I think it's probably a watch this space for this one. And it feels to me like they're sort of weighing that up at this moment in time. And obviously we'll see how it develops in the coming days and weeks. I'd like to see him back here. I thought he made a good contribution. I thought they missed him actually in the final games of the season where they didn't have that pace and that threat in behind. But look, if there's someone out there who maybe is more available or has more ability, then it would be remiss of them not to look into that. So yeah, watch this space on Lewis Dobbin, I'd say.
Yeah, we'll be live for another sort of 5 or 10 minutes. So any late comments or questions, get them down below. Jeffman saying, out of the top three in the odds market, who would you prefer? Russell Martin?
I read that as Martin O'Neill for a minute. I thought, goodness me.
suppose, Connor, out of those three, you know, clearly, I think, you know, with those betting odds, that there will be names that will start to appear, you know, when the reports, you know, from you know, wherever it might come from, around potential names will surface, that will change. But maybe of those three, or anybody that's not on that list, do you have a preferred choice at this moment in time?
Simply of those names, it would be Russ, I think, purely on those names. It's all, head coach searches are so difficult because obviously it's, who would have looked in Denmark last summer? Absolutely nobody. But you feel in terms of what they want, someone who can develop players individually and improve them, someone who can push to get results, and someone who has a very distinctive style of play. Well, that does feel like Russell Martin, doesn't it, in terms of domestically and when we think of him. So, I think it would be silly if there was not at some stage, at any stage, a conversation with either him or his people to try and see if that was something that he would be interested in sitting down and talking about. Maybe that has happened. Maybe that hasn't happened. Maybe that will happen. Maybe that won't happen. But it feels certainly of the domestic options that are available at this moment in time, he probably feels like the best one. That's before really you consider, obviously, the playing context and the emotional relationship that he has with Norwich. That being said, there's a whole world of kind of overseas options there. And as I said, right from the outset, really, what is the barrier at this moment in time to them getting it? Well, any of those three, really, they're none. They're all out of work. They're all available. And yet we're expecting this search to take another couple of weeks. That doesn't really feel to me like those guys are, if not in the running, then if not at the front of the running. But again, that's a place of opinion rather than knowledge. It might be in 2 weeks' time and it's just a thorough process and they want to really comb through their options. So, yeah, Russ, of those options, what about you, Adam? Can you make a case for any of the other two?
Yeah, for me, Gary O'Neill doesn't really inspire me as a choice, if I'm being honest. I've obviously clearly done, you know, good work with Bournemouth initially and then Wolves. You know, I felt he'd probably done a decent enough job there. I know they obviously were struggling a bit, you know, before he got, you know, the chop. And then, you know, the guy who's come in, Victor Pereira, has done a very good job to sort of guide them away from safety. But then you look at kind of that chasm, I suppose, between, you know, the sort of teams that get promoted now and the rest. It's so, you know, so vast. You know, you never know whether O'Neill could have potentially turned that round. But I don't think for Norwich, it doesn't really inspire me. Tom Cleverley, again, you know, only, what, 18 months now as a senior head coach. You know, I don't know. I think he'd done a good job at Watford, but maybe not enough for me to feel inspired as him as a choice. So we'll see. Obviously, clearly that we'll bring you any news on that situation and, you know, any potential links that will surface.
Yeah, I was just going to say, can you flash up that latest Jeff Mann comment? Because I think this is kind of where my head is at. I agree with him here. That's the type that I would like to see. Someone who is I don't really subscribe to the view that you need 500 games to be classed as a good manager. But I think in terms of where they're at the moment, clearly they've gone down the overseas inexperience, bit of a gamble route. I'd like to see someone who's perhaps, as Jeff Mann said, a little bit of a statement, someone that makes you think, oof, okay, yeah, you kind of know that they mean business. Royal Mussinho, Liam Manning, someone along those lines. Again, without the context of knowing if any of those guys would be up for it, I think Mussinho is a good shout as well. That to me would feel smart and wise. I know maybe even someone like Marty Cifuentes at QPR, who clearly is on guarding leave and would be available in theory. So that feels like the road I would like to see them go down increasingly. Whether it is the road they go down or not, I'm not sure. Would it surprise me if we got someone else from overseas who maybe had a little bit more experience? No, but I think that to me would make sense. And, you know, purely with my fan hat on, that's the one probably that I would feel most excited by at this moment in time.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you on that. And it feels certainly, as you outlined, yeah, the fact that there's managers out there out of work and Norwich, you know, still sort of putting that longer term timeline on it. Clearly, they're searching for managers that you'd imagine are still employed by other clubs. A few people sort of flashing up comments around potential managers. Kevin saying personal opinion like Russell, but don't think it'd be right here. It doesn't. Matty also saying if they get Russ in, they must give him time. Ralph Hasnoodle, I really don't see that one, to be honest.
Me neither. It feels a bit Dean Smith, doesn't it? Just been sacked. And, you know, they said they'd learned a lot from that process in terms of him not having a break. He's just, as we said, just been sacked. I don't think the style of play really matches up, to be completely honest. I think he was linked with it, wasn't he, post Farker maybe, when he was still at Southampton? I think his name was definitely mentioned. Yeah, he's more of a Red Bull kind of school than sort of a Napperite, I would say. Arsene Wenger, possession, being the protagonist type. So, yeah, it doesn't really feel like the style of play matches up. But yeah, it would be an interesting name, I guess, given what he's done in the Premier League and with Southampton over a number of years. And of course, there is an origin link there because Craig Fleming is his number two. So that would, in many ways, that'd be nice to have Flem back as in any sort of Norwich City capacity, really. So yeah, but I'm with you. I don't really see that Gary O'Neill, maybe even a Steve Cooper, purely on style of play points. But who's to say that Norwich don't pivot and decide that actually maybe they want to go in a slightly different direction after what happened with Johannes Ovtorup? But I didn't get that sense listening to Ben Napper today, and he kind of reiterated it's about not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. So yeah, I could see it being someone who maybe is of a similar ilk, but maybe slightly different in profile to Johannes.
Yeah, a few other shouts. Steve Cooper from Jonathan. There's also Trax Boyd James saying, I'd have my money on someone who we've never even heard of, someone young, upcoming coach with a good reputation. Yeah, that's not beyond the realms. And to round off the show, Connor, Neil saying, can you confirm the pink and there's no movements in the pipeline? I'm assuming he means potentially me or you or Paddy or Sam. I've got no plans to go anywhere this summer.
No, I'm very, very happy where I am, very content. So I'm sticking around this summer as far as, obviously I can't speak for the other two guys, but we can speak for ourselves. So not that I'm aware of at this moment in time. I think we're going to be heading into the season with the same team, rejoice or otherwise, as you wish. But yeah, I'm actually really, even though this season's just ended, I'm already really looking forward to next season and what that will bring. I think it's never dull, is it, covering this fantastic football club? And yeah, I don't think next season's going to be either.
Indeed, yeah. Jeff has apparently already put a bid in for 4 sausage rolls for Sam. So we'll see if he, whoever the pink and, you know, head honchos will accept that offer. And I think with that, we're gonna round off the show. Of course, thanks for joining us this lunchtime. If you haven't already gone and consumed that Ben Napper interview, clearly go over and do that. Some interesting stuff in there, which is well worth you know, delving into over this weekend. There'll be loads of other good stuff coming your way, clearly next week as well, around, I think, the women's team and some stuff around there. So clearly keep it locked to the pink and channels. And of course, we'll have everything covered across our channels on this head, you know, coach search, which feels like it's going to be, fairly lengthy one, maybe the next couple of weeks. So I think lots of good names coming your way. We'll have various Pink and Pods and everything. So if you aren't already subscribed to the Pink and Plus, then do go over there and give us a look. $2.99 a month. So well worth, you know, taking that out, given what's coming ahead, and we'll have all the pre-season coverage and everything. So, yeah, thanks for all your support this year. We're going to sign off on this Friday, lovely Friday lunchtime. And, of course, enjoy your weekends and no football. So, Connor, what are you going to get up to, I suppose, on a weekend without football?
I'll probably be chasing around a 5-year-old, but hopefully some time to watch the playoffs. That's my aim. And obviously, I think our colleague Paddy will be particularly somewhere in and around the television at 8 o'clock tonight as Coventry play Sunderland. So yeah, I think there's still plenty of football to get your teeth into, which will be good. But yeah, hopefully seeing my son a little bit will be nice. What about you, Adam? What about you?
I've had a plaster in a week, so I'm waiting for that to dry, and I've got a bit of wallpaper stripping to do. So yeah, a load of DIY which I've been putting off for the last few weeks. So yeah, I suppose if the windows are open, the sunshine's coming in, then I can deal with it. Albeit, yeah, not as fun as covering Norwich, which of course is what we love to do. So with that, we're going to sign off. Enjoy your weekend, and of course, loads of good stuff coming your way next week. So keep it locked to the Finker channels, and we'll see you in the next one.